This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer. A free-for-all Friday.
You're asking to hear something I don't want to say. But if I do say it, I think you ought to hear it.
You got anything on your chest besides your chin, you better get it off.
All right, then you asked for it.
Yes, we did. So lay it on us. Free-for-all Friday means you set the tone. Here is Libby Znaimer.
Good afternoon, and welcome to this free-for-all Friday. And there is so much to talk about, I barely know where to begin. But as always, I'll go with the soonest deadline, which is 2 p.m. today, for entering municipal races. Now, interesting, this morning, the former councillor who represented Toronto Danforth for 8 years, Mary Fragadakis, she registered to run. Now, this is interesting because yesterday on our municipal panel, John Burnside, current city councillor, was of the opinion that Paula Fletcher didn't have some epiphany 2 days after registering to run, that that was her plan. But by doing it at the last minute, she was hoping to insert her mentee, the young woman that she wants, and not give others who have more name recognition, more experience, a chance. But Mary Fragadakis jumped in there. She represented the ward from 2010 to 2018 when Paula Fletcher defeated her. So that's interesting. And that is, somebody not on the Olivia Chow team. The other question, and I have a running unbet with Jane Brown, who says we didn't make the bet about whether Chris Alexander will withdraw from the race. And apparently he's just tweeted something saying no, even though his numbers have not budged and he hasn't really been very active since he got into the race. It's all a mystery, and maybe our esteemed panelists can shed some light on, like, what the heck is behind it and why is it continuing? There's more we have to get to. Here's a story we haven't even touched. So as of Monday, there's a new law in the province requiring actual cash bail. Now, there are court challenges against this. That's fine. That takes the time to wind through the courts. But in the meantime, a judge is flouting that law. It's an Ontario Superior Court judge, and he is not requiring cash bail from a suspect who was arrested as part of a sting on human trafficking. That is the case. He is choosing to make his case. And I think that is just going to give fuel to people who say justices are overstepping. And getting to the big national question and the next deadline, which is midnight tonight, and that is on the trade deal. So the overarching question for our audience, I say today, is should we put booze back on the shelves or should we not put booze back on the shelves? Now, there's no deal without doing that. And here's what the Premier of Manitoba had to say about it, Wab Kanoo.
I was told by the Prime Minister that he wants us to put the booze back on the shelves. So he was, I wouldn't say that he was begging us, but what is a step before begging?
Well, what is the step before begging? Is it down on one knee as opposed to two? I will entertain comments and questions on that as well. But I'm asking you people, should we put booze back on the shelf? We have not heard from Doug Ford. We did hear, I was a little confused because we heard from another premier said, oh, all the premiers agree. But agree to what? I think even they do not have good, clear answers on what actually is in that deal. The one thing that seems to be confirmed is that the tariffs on autos would go down to 15 from 25, but a lot of people say at 15, cars manufactured here still are not profitable, and it will not stop the moves of automakers to go and produce in the States. So, what's the price? What do we get in return? And another thing that Wab Kanu said, and here's where I totally disagree with him. He sort of gave them an out. He said, well, if we do agree to put the booze back on the shelves, just don't buy it, people. Let's show them. But to me, those are different things. Not having it available for sale is a lever, a surprisingly effective lever that is completely out of proportion to the actual importance in the economy. Whether or not people buy it, well, that's a market thing. And that is backward looking because you don't get numbers till after a period. Putting it on the shelves is forward looking. So that is my take on that. Enough from me, people. Want to hear from you. The numbers, 866-740-4740. That is our long-distance phone line and our text line. And 416-360-0740. And again, the big questions, should we put that booze back on the shelf? And what about this municipal race? And now let me introduce our very interesting panelists. We've got Tasha Carradine, who is a commentator and columnist with the National Post and an occasional guest host here on Fight Back and a candidate to become the TDSB trustee in Ward 7, and John McEtishan, conservative strategist and president of Bradgate Research Group. Hey, guys.
Hey. Where do we start, Libby?
I'm going to start with John, because at this point, Chris Alexander is a mystery. If he was really serious about this race, then he would have been more active in the last 2 weeks. I talked to him once. He was full of beans, but there's been almost nothing since then. People say his website doesn't work properly. We haven't seen endorsements. And it's hard to understand, because if he doesn't do well with this, I don't see how it helps him towards any next thing, John. So what do you think?
Well, I think, the Fletcher example gives you cause to question the motivations of politicians and what they say as being true or not. So certainly in Paul's situation, the truth has now been out. And true to form, outed in showing the incompetency, right? Like, if she literally wanted the block previous person out, she should have made her announcement at 2:05, and then there would have been no time for somebody to run around and get the measly number of 25 signatures to run as a counselor. So now we go to Chris Alexander, and you're right. Like, talk about mystified. Everything in that gentleman's portfolio says intelligent, thoughtful, accomplished, professional. Now, there is a concept, and Tasha, you're a candidate now, so I this is not meant towards you, because you know how what high regard I hold you in. But sometimes people run for office and their brains go out the window. So whether or not he's fallen into that category of all of a sudden the stupidest guy in the room, or there's an ulterior motive. So the reality is, Chris is a mystery today. And if he doesn't withdraw by 2:00, he will be the stupidest person running for mayor. And all these things come out in fullness of time, just like Paula.
Okay. A technical note to you, John. Can you use something different in your ears? Because we've got a weird echo from those earbuds.
It's not the earbuds. I'm in an off campaign office now. The echo is going to stay. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think that's maybe a bridge too far, accusing him of taking a bribe or something. I can't imagine that's it. And this whole thing about being egged on by certain consultants, well, that was maybe where he got in. But Tasha, I mean, what could he possibly gain? Because he's a former Harper cabinet minister. I'm sure he does not, he wants to get rid of Chow and her fellow travelers. So why would he do this way?
So I actually happened to run into Chris Alexander just the day after he announced. I was driving through Rosedale and there he was. And so I pulled over and said, Chris, what's up? Mm-hmm. You know, I just heard this. What's going on? And at the time, he said that he had looked at the polling and he thought he had a shot to do this, to do exactly that, to unseat Chow. So that was what he told me. And, you know, I've known Chris Alexander a long time in different ways. He is exactly as John said, a person of integrity, intelligence, all these things. He seemed very genuine and upbeat when I saw him briefly there to say that that's what he wanted to do. That's why he was in. He didn't seem to have, you know, I asked him about organization and he said, well, it's like early days and they didn't really have a lot organized, but I assume by now they do. I've seen he's put videos out and other things. So I do think, though, that I probably disagree with the analysis of the polls just looking at them today. You know, it's any logical person will say this will split the center-right voter, the anti-Chow ABC vote, if you will, anyone but Chow vote. So the result of it is, you know, it's either if you pick one or the other, I don't think anyone's going anywhere. They're both going to stay in. I think 2 o'clock's going to come around. They're both going to be there. So for people who don't want former Yoselovy Chow, that's problematic, right? So I think I don't fully understand either in some ways, because his portfolios have always been very international. He's always been very well spoken on the international scene, and he was a former diplomat. And that's not to say you can't be diplomatic or shouldn't be in municipal politics, but it's a different animal completely. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But definitely, I think the Chow campaign is probably very happy about it if he stays in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I also talked to him on this show the day after he registered. I haven't talked to him since then. But I mean, he came in at 10%. The last thing I saw was 11%. You know, that's not going to get him over the finish line. And failing at something like this, I don't see how that sets him up for anything. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is an idea to set him up for something either. I mean, this is, you know, people run for office for different reasons. I like to think they run for the right ones because that's what it's supposed to be about. You know, he's not someone who doesn't have to burnish his reputation, like, by running. It's, you know, he's been a cabinet minister federally. It's, you know, he doesn't have to have more notoriety or exposure or this kind of thing to do well in life and do whatever he would want to choose to do. So I don't know. The short answer is I'm not in his head. I don't know. All I know is the numbers say that it will make it very difficult for either himself or Brad Bradford, who has been in this race now for months, to win because they're appealing to the same constituency.
Well, maybe yes and maybe no. My understanding, John, from some of the polling is that his 10% corresponded to none of the above. So people who don't like either Olivia Chow or Brad Bradford, and to my way of thinking, I think that's a cohort that may not even bother to vote. So is it possible that it really doesn't have much of an impact at all?
Totally. I would literally say that it's a problem with polling being used for this purpose. And it's one of the reasons why it's even dubious when different debate people use it as a metric to qualify for debates, because there's over 40 people running. They're not on the ballot. I can tell you from the work I've done politically over the years, when you ask party name versus leader versus local candidate of the exact same people, you often get radically different results. And you would think that's not possible. Well, it is. So on something like this, when really maybe it would have been 12 or 15% rather than the 10 or 11 he'd been getting if the choice had been someone else.
Okay, I'm going to start off with Sita in Mississauga. Hi, Sita.
Hi, Libby. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Oh, so Trump huffs and he puffs. Drill, baby, drill. And we don't need Canada. Yet he wants a deal. He is smart. He's threatening us with 50%, hoping that we fall. Our prime minister is doing a great job. He's staying calm and don't let out the information out in the public. Just like unlike Trump. Trump is bragging and fooling the people when a deal is not done yet. But as soon as our premiers and found out, the cat is out of the bag. But thank goodness Ford is missing. So since Booze is pissing off Trump, and it's not on the shelf, let's put it back on and let's play his game, which I think our prime minister is trying to do.
Okay,
people,
Sita.
Don't buy it.
Okay, Sita. Sita wants to put the Booze back on the shelf. John, earlier I saw you shaking your head when that question came up.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with putting the Booze back on the shelves until after there's a deal. And I would go further. So I'm sure the premier hasn't thought of this yet. But when there's a deal, the Booze should go back on the shelves. But in Ontario, I don't know about the other provinces, but in Ontario, it's currently in storage, right? So what I would say is, and we will reorder in the future when there is at least 6 months to a year of Trump not being stupid and threatening us or tearing up any deals or doing anything else. So I would extend that and simply say, we'll put it back on the shelves. But if you don't keep your deal, buddy, we're ready to act immediately.
If 6 months of Trump not doing those things, John, will never happen. So the Booze would never go back on. You're nodding. Okay, that's an interesting strategy. I'll take the contrarian approach. I think that in terms of all the concessions that we could make as a country, this one will hurt us the least because people won't buy it. Wab Kanu should have not said that out loud. Don't buy it. We'll put it back. Don't buy it. I think people won't. I think people won't choose to buy it. I think they've also lived without it now for long enough. They've found other things that they want. If they're absolutely diehard, you know, they could always go to the States, buy it if they really had wanted to. But they haven't. So, you know, traffic to the U.S. is down. So I don't think people are crossing the border to get liquor. I think that that is a concession. It's a very symbolic one for Trump. I agree that it shouldn't go back on until the deal is done and signed. But I think to say it, put it in the deal, I think, okay, do that. Because it's one of those things. It's a vanity thing for Trump. It appeals to particular constituencies, like Kentucky, for example, where Kentucky bourbon is made. They are hurting from this. So give him that so that he doesn't demand more from us and get as much as we can in return on aluminum and steel and autos. The 15% is not great. It's better than what's there. But, we'll see how much movement he does on softwood lumber and all the rest of it, too. I don't have a problem with that, giving that one up, so to speak.
Okay. It's had an impact far beyond its actual importance economically. I'm going to read one text before we head into our first break and said, this is Jan. Hi, Jan. Relationship with the U.S., some emotional people got fooled by politicians and Trump rhetoric. We should not promote and work with the Trump government for the duration. Well, we have no choice but to work with them. They are the elected government, so I don't know about that. We've got more texts. I'm going to give the numbers out again before we head to our first break. 866-744-740. That is our text line. And our long-distance phone line, and 416-360-0740. We're heading into our first break. The big questions, should we put Booze back on the shelf? Everyone says that whatever comes out tonight is just an interim thing. It's not the full agreement, and it'll involve a lot of concessions. So tell us what you think. Also, municipally, what do you think about all the latest comings and goings and machinations by the so-called progressive left when we return?
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer.
When one considers the meaning of life, it is a struggle between alternative viewpoints of life itself.
A free-for-all Friday.
And without the ability to defend one's own viewpoint against other, perhaps more aggressive ideologies, then reasonableness and moderation could quite simply disappear.
Name your topic and be as deep as you like, as long as there's a point in there somewhere. Here is Libby Znaimer.
Welcome back to this free-for-all Friday, and we are hurtling towards two deadlines at 2 p.m. That's the deadline to register to run in any municipal race. And one of the questions was, will Chris Alexander, who jumped into the race a couple weeks back, will he withdraw? Jane Brown thinks he will. I think he probably won't, though. And he tweeted something today, which I don't read this as such a strong indication. He sort of says it's responding to somebody else's tweet saying they need to run against Chow. And he says, I agree, and that's why I'm running, to ensure there's a candidate credible and consistent enough to defeat this incumbent. So to me, that's not that definitive one way or another. The other deadline, of course, is at midnight. It is the deadline for us having something signed on paper with the Americans, and that will prevent another 50% tariff on $28 billion worth of goods. And it all depends on whether the premiers agree to put the booze back on the shelves. And that is the big yes or no question today. So let's take a call from Evie in Toronto. Hi, Evie.
I was going to call about something else, but the thing that worries me most is that Chow is going to get back in. I'm sickened to think that that's going to happen. That's my comment now.
Okay, you know what? Well, your best bet is to vote for her challenger, Brad Bradford.
Yep, of course.
Okay, Evie, thank you for that. Let's take a call from Brian in Mimico. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Libby. Yeah, I think Rob Cadeau made a mistake. We should have been telling the Americans, fine, that'll be part of the deal. We'll get everybody, put the American booze back on the shelf. But you have to remember, that doesn't guarantee that Canadians are going to buy it, because you've really pissed off a lot of Canadians, like, say, with the rest of the world. But, it, you know, this way it looks like the politicians told them not to buy it, where it should be that the people themselves have decided not to buy it. That would have been the better way to do it.
Okay, thanks. I disagree with that. So first of all, when it comes to these things, what people tell a pollster and what they actually do are two very different things. So they might say, oh, I'm not going to buy any of that American booze. People who like some of the American products. I know there are people who just love bourbon. They're going to buy it. I actually have someone at home who really likes certain kinds of California wine. He'll probably buy it, because when we were on holiday, he was buying it. So I couldn't stop him. And it was really expensive in Scandinavia. But so there you go. And people have already, I mean, the number of Canadians traveling to the States has been going up steadily for the last, 3 months. So I think that idea of we're not going there, that is rapidly falling apart. But again, I think they're two different things. Whether or not people buy it, that's a backward-looking statistic, and that's the market working. But having it, whether it's available, that's a political thing. So there you go. And John, I think you came up with a very Canadian compromise there. Put the $8 million worth that we have back on the shelf, but don't buy any more.
Yeah, that to me is the simplest thing. And then we can see. And if he holds the deal and he doesn't change his mind in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, right? So it gives us an out as well. But we'll wait and see.
Tasha?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think in not every province is, you know, Newfoundland and Labrador are premier. So, yeah, they're all on board. Quebec was still hedging yesterday. They weren't, they were the premier there, who was running for election, re-election, by the way, and probably won't be re-elected, was not definitive. She was not equivocal. Their big issue, of course, is supply management. And that hasn't been discussed in any news that we've seen so far, which, you know, I don't think is good for Canadian consumers. There's a lot of reasons to get rid of supply management. But for Quebec, it's a sacred cow politically. And the Liberals are also running a candidate who was a former milk board head in the by-election on the 31st. So no one wants to touch that one. No one wants to go to the barn on that one. And it's that, I think that's one of the reasons the government also might be leaving this alone, going, yeah, we'll put the booze back, just don't take the, we're not taking more cheese, right? So, and we'd have to also, the other thing, if they do amend any legislation in this deal, such as quotas, which are in legislation for dairy, they would have to go to the House of Commons and get a ratification of the deal. So they'd have to either call an emergency session or wait. I mean, they can't really wait, I guess, because the thing is, the deadline is tomorrow night, or is tonight rather, but I think the last thing that Mark Carney wants is to have the Bloc Québécois jumping up and down and yelling at him about dairy and concessions on dairy. So that they'll probably try and find a deal where they don't have to actually ratify it, where they don't have to go before the House and give all the opposition politicians a chance to mouth off on it.
Well, we haven't heard anything from our people on supply management, but we did hear, I think, is it Trump or was it Vance saying, yes, we're getting more access for our farmers. So
farmers is a wide thing. Is it supply management? Is it dairy? Is it the Wisconsin guys that Trump always used as an example? We don't know. You know, we buy a lot of agricultural products from the U.S. The issue with dairy is the quota system we have here that's designed to protect our farmers. We are disproportionately, 49% of them are in Quebec. So it's a very hot issue there in particular. Mm. But it's been, you know, we dismantled the wheat board in Canada under Stephen Harper. That went by the wayside. We've dismantled all these kinds of things before. Other countries have gotten rid of supply management, New Zealand, for example. So it would actually be a good thing to have more competition here. We can still buy Canadian like we're doing with other products. We can still choose to do that. If you're going to allow American product in, I don't think all of a sudden there'd be a flood of people. The other thing, too, I got to say, there's products internationally, too. You know, Kerrygold butter you get in Ireland is phenomenal. It's actually the second best-selling butter in the U.S.
I keep meaning delicious. To try it. It's delicious.
It's so good.
Oh, it's Libby, expensive.
It's well, because of the tariffs. Exactly. If it wasn't, you could buy it here. They buy it at Costco in the U.S. I mean, you know, the consumer here pays about $240 a year per household more every year because of supply management. And it hits poor families the most, people on the low end of the income scale as a percentage of their income. So, you know, there's lots of reasons to get rid of it, but the lobby is very strong. So I don't see it happening with this deal.
Okay, well, maybe I'll splurge. It's something like $10 for just a small little brick.
It's so good. I had it in Ireland. I ended up buying it here.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was wondering. I mean, how long has it been in transit and all of that? But
the cows are dead by now. I don't know. Anyway.
The cows are dead by now. Okay. So let me read a text from Debbie. And it says, it's just booze and it truly doesn't affect everyone in Canada. Put it back on the shelf and keep slippery when wet signs up in those areas of the LCBO. Again, I don't think getting people not to buy it is very different from this whole issue of whether or not it's available for sale. So whatever. And again, I think what people say and what they do are two very different things. Okay. Now, here is, I don't know if this is the same Jan or a different Jan, and he or she writes, hi, I am totally behind Brad Bradford. The city needs us specifically, or the city needs you, I guess, specifically with your 3 C's agenda, crime, congestion, and the cost of living to handle the mess that Mayor Olivia Chow has created. Chris should not get close in the poll, and he should endorse Brad if he is after change. Okay. Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but hey, people, that is the case where just have a look. And if you think that the city is not going in the right direction and you want to get rid of Olivia Chow, I think at this point you have to be pragmatic. And the only option is to vote for Brad Bradford. Much as I like Chris Alexander and think he's a smart guy and a nice guy and all of that. So there's my two cents. And, you know, last time there was a lot of talk about conservatives splitting their vote. We had Anthony Fury, who also had, right, 10, 11, 12% and wouldn't pull out of the race. And there was also a timing issue because Anna Bailao really came on at the end, but Olivia Chow won the advance polls. So that's something that we should take into account as well. So here, there's another text. Let me read it. Which one is it? Okay. I've read some of these texts. Now I'm going to take a call from Fiona in Toronto. Hi, Fiona.
Hi. How about with the alcohol that they took off the shelf? How about if they have an auction and they give the money to charity and then not buy anymore?
Well, that's been put forward before. A lot of people think that's a good idea.
I think that's a smart idea. And do it, like, give it to, like, Canadian charities and things like that.
Okay. Thank you for that, Fiona. Well, apparently, we spent $8 million. That's $8 million worth of booze that we took off the shelves. To me, it's some of the best money spent because, unfortunately, governments waste money. This government wastes money on all kinds of stuff that we really don't need. I think that money was well spent, even though apparently 2 million of it has already gone bad or is in the process of going bad. But this charity auction idea, John, does it send the right message?
I mean, it's a valid option. It's a nice idea, but I don't think it's anything that the premier is going to. I mean, it's been out there for a long time now, so it's not going to happen because it hasn't caught his attention.
Okay, let's get to a story we haven't even touched, and that is this bail story. So as of Monday, under the law, cash bail is required. And yes, there are court challenges. You know, we expected those, and that's fine. And there is a legal process for that. But then there's this judge who just said, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And, you know, it's not even a question. They say this will create a two-tier justice system. It's not like he chose a case where it's some poor person, I don't know, shoplifting, whatever. It is a suspect who was arrested in a sting to stop human trafficking. And I look at this and I think, what? Tasha.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. This is why this is them, and you get the call of, you know, judges have gone too far, judges are activists, people turn against the judicial system, it falls into disrepute. Absolutely, because you know, this isn't somebody who's caught stealing a loaf of bread for their kids. This is a woman who was involved in this ring preying on other women, likely. I mean, it's horrible. And so I don't know what the judge is thinking, is that this is the case he would choose to put in the window, first of all. And second, you know, the argument that you shouldn't have cash bail, the reason for cash bail is to prevent people from being the sort of catch and release system that we have, right? That people are sick and tired of seeing repeat offenders in particular going back on the street. So I don't think he's going to get a lot of public sympathy or support. And, you know, I wonder what what to do now, what the government can do, because, you know, judges have discretion, obviously, but here he's flouting the law. So it's a bit of a different animal, frankly.
Yeah, that's interesting. That I've never seen, I mean, and again, I mean, You know, I think it's great to have an independent judiciary, but this really, to me, is just beyond the pale. John?
Yeah.
What I thought of immediately, aside from the revulsion of a bad decision by someone who now we have to question their fitness for sitting on the bench, I remember this old movie called Walking Tall. And when injustice happened in that movie by a judge, and the main character was a sheriff, the sheriff went through the book and he discovered that the judge can make his rulings, but the sheriff decided where the office was. So I hope somebody in Doug Downey's office right now is going through that to find out what power they have, because if there ever was a judge that deserved to have his desk move into a men's washroom, it's this judge. Like, but that's what the movie was, and it was a real simple indicator of the quality of the decision. This is absolutely a judge playing politics. Everybody goes outside of their lane a little bit, but this is not a small thing. And as you said, Libby, this isn't this isn't a petty crime. This isn't a shoplifting. This is a serious crime. This is exactly what brings disrepute and brings everybody into thinking less of the justice system and emboldens. You want to talk about direct actions. If this doesn't embolden all criminals to say, this is the Wild West, we can do what we want with impunity, I don't know what does.
Okay, and it's also a precedent of some sort. Yeah. We've got to take our second break, people. I'm also keen to hear from you on this particular incident. What do you think of a judge doing that and choosing to do it with this kind of a crime? It boggles the mind. I'm going to give the numbers out again before we head into break. 866-744-740, that is our text line and our long-distance phone line. And, of course, 416-360-0740. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer. A free-for-all Friday. Step up, say your piece, and we promise not to interrupt. Just be lively about it. We have a lot of listeners hanging on your every word. Here is Libby Znaimer.
Welcome back to this free-for-all Friday. I am going to give you the numbers again. 866-744-740. That's our text line, our long-distance phone line, and 416-360-0740. And I am going to begin with a text from Barty. And she says, I agree with you, Libby. People are going to buy what people want to buy. And could prices for U.S. liquor be raised? Well, of course they could be. But again, I don't think that side of it is really relevant to this particular conversation. And I also want to flag, we just started talking about before the break, and that was this case of a judge, an Ontario Superior Court judge named Cowan, of him just flouting the new law requiring cash bail. Presumably he doesn't agree with it, but the case that he chose not to collect cash bail is a woman who is suspected to be part of a human trafficking ring. It's not some poor indigent person picked up for whatever. So I think this is really beyond the pale. Now, we don't know why the judge decided to go this route, because his reasons are protected by a publication ban. Tasha.
Yeah, well, this is actually, you know, issues for judges. Judges often can't explain beyond the decision they render, right? This is one of the things that it makes it hard sometimes to understand the rationale. A judge can't go on your show, Libby, and say, this is what I meant in my ruling, and talk about it. So it has to stand on its own. And yeah, the reasons aren't there, but I think the amount was not very large either. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was like $1,000 something. So
that's a promise.
I don't know why this particular thing was chosen. This particular case was chosen by this judge for that exemption. And we won't know beyond the reasons there, but on the face of it, you know, human trafficking, if I had to pick any offenses that would really, you know, that I wouldn't care how much bail these people had to pay, human trafficking would probably be near the top of the list. Child pornography, child trafficking. I mean, yeah, no mercy, no pity, right? And this is the example he uses. So it shows a lack of judgment of the judge, John's point. The judge didn't have a lot of judgment as to how this would be perceived by the public. And that's not a reason for a judge to rule, but it's still, I think, in his own rationale, that he doesn't think this crime merits the hardest, you know, line is disturbing to me.
Yeah, it's, I think, disturbing to a lot of it. Now, getting back to the questions of the day. So, people, I still want to know what you think. Should we put booze back on the shelf? Does it depend on what we know about what's in the deal? And I think there's a lot that's not in the deal. So it's still an open question. And I started the show with that clip from Wab Kanoo saying it was one step before begging from the prime minister. I'm still willing to entertain phone calls on what exactly is that one step before begging? I don't know. Maybe it is one knee instead of two. Anyway, here is a text from somebody who didn't leave their name. Hi, I'm not sure why booze has become such an important item versus gas and food prices, but I think put it back and let the people decide. Okay, well, I think none of us are sure why booze has become such an important item, but since it has, I say let's use it to its best advantage.
Libby, if I can offer a suggestion on that, when you think about all the posturing that we've done as a country or being led by the prime minister, what is it that we've done to react to the United States? You know, for a brief moment and a half, I think there was retaliatory tariffs. But the thing with booze is everybody understands what we're talking about. It's demonstrable. It's a real thing. But there's a store, we go to get it, or stores. Right. And it's a real thing, and it's taken a long time, but it's been noticed by the prime minister by the president. It is the second biggest thing that's got his attention and a reaction over the entire tariff dispute. Not anything that government did, not the federal government. Right. This is the premier's doing it. And the thing that got the most reaction out of him was that ad that Ford ran. And I got to tell you, I'm hoping that the premier's thinking, if this guy doesn't settle by midnight tonight, or we don't have a deal in the next few days, because taco, we could expect that it might be extended again, that the reality is there's the primary season. We may have our municipals, but Americans have big elections every 2 years. It's only their presidential, it's every four. It would be a great time to put that ad back on the airwaves at every one of those states that has sympathy for our trade position, and that would hurt the Republicans.
Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there seems to be a consensus that ad, and I'm reminding people that Doug Ford spent a huge amount of our money on this ad touting Ronald Reagan and his position on trade, and people think that actually blew things up.
It did.
I don't know.
It did. Well, there was a lot blowing up at the time. There were other things. There was, you know, the auto issue was one of the big sticking points. But that ad did not help at all. I talked to people, including the U.S. ambassador to Canada, who said that ad was, you know, it was a necessary stick in the eye. And I think that this is part of the problem. Part of the problem has been that because of our federal system, the prime minister can't order provincial premiers to do things, right? He can't. They have their own jurisdictions. And the perception in the U.S. is that this weakens him, that because he had these freelancing by Ford, particularly that ad, what it telegraphed to Washington was that our prime minister isn't as strong a leader, and we can take advantage of that because, look, people are going offside. It doesn't help. It doesn't help.
The reality is he is a weak leader, and they are taking advantage of it. And it's a stick in the eye is exactly what
Ford didn't have to do that. Ford didn't have to do that. It was unnecessary. And put it in the Super Bowl. It's like why don't you just take a stick and stab someone in the eye? At the time, we were moving towards a sectoral deal: autos, aluminum, and steel.
I don't believe that.
Well, unless every single person I've talked to on both sides at pretty high levels has lied, I don't think so. And there was a great deal of disappointment when things went sideways. They didn't talk for 6 months. 6 months. The Americans just went off and said, forget it. So that ad was a big piece of it. And I think that, you know, Ford overplayed his hand. He absolutely did. And it was, like I said, an unnecessary thing to do. Did he want to be Captain Canada? Look like he was defending the auto industry? It didn't achieve anything. It didn't achieve that. It just made it look like he was doing something, but it didn't achieve it. It was a mistake. So, but the fact Carney couldn't prevent him from doing it, that reflected on Carney. And again, it is not, it is a structural weakness we have in the country. I think anyone herding all the cats that, you know, Johnny McDonald famously said, herding prime ministers is like herding cats and it's very difficult to do. It's even more difficult if they have their own agendas.
So they have states' rights. I'm going to take a call from Daryl in Toronto. Hi, Daryl.
Hi. First of all, at the very beginning, Doug Ford should have just sold off the American booze rather than us paying to keep it. I mean, they've already been paid for it, so he's not hurting anyone there. My other idea is take the stuff that's about to go bad, put it on a boat. Let's take it out into the middle of Lake Ontario where the border is and have our own little Boston Tea Party and dump it there.
Okay.
He wants to make a statement.
I don't know how polluting it is, and it's going bad anyway.
Chances are it would clean up the lake.
Okay, Daryl. Thanks for that. Yeah, I mean, it is, I think, way too late to litigate whether that ad by Doug Ford was really, really bad or really, really good. Like, it's spilt milk or spilt booze, whatever. Let's move on to other things. I think, you know, he is right to keep his powder dry until the deadline. And I don't even know if we're going to find out what is in that deal at the deadline, because the prime minister is not that transparent. And we saw what happened with the deal to reopen the bridge. So I'm not sure.
But Libby, we'll find out because Trump will tell us and we will know that every other word is accurate.
Well, yeah, but, you know, what Trump tells us.
Right?
Trump will tell us what Trump wants to tell us, right?
Exactly.
Though, yeah, there's been preliminary stuff released by the actual U.S. Trade Office. So that might be more reliable than what comes out of Donald Trump's mouth. And of course, we didn't even discuss, but his sidekick, J.D. Vance, was insulting us all over the place. And again, I don't know what the strategy is. Was that to look tough? Or he was saying Mark Carney tried to look tough. It's like the whole thing is kind of, I don't know.
Well, that
ridiculous.
One I think is actually a little bit easier, Libby. I think that's Vance doing the two things that he does well. One, he is being the most loyal person you can find in the Trump administration to his president, which is kind of his job, actually, to be fair to him. And the second is he's auditioning to replace Trump because Trump is term limited, right? He will be around for about another 24 months. And then there will be somebody new, and it's an open question as to who the Republican nominee will be. But presumably the sitting vice president is almost an automatic front runner. So he's going after that MAGA base to inherit them from Trump.
Well, and then there's, of course, all that overriding talk about will Trump actually leave office or try to stay. I don't know about that. We have just a few minutes left. I'm not sure. Did I ask you, Tasha? I mean, do you think there's any chance that Chris Alexander will drop out?
I do not know. I am no crystal ball on that one. No pun intended. I really honestly, we'll 1 hour left. My sense is no. My sense is not that he will. And it's not like a Paula Fletcher situation where, you know, she waited. And to John's point, she didn't wait long enough. If her idea was that she was going to anoint her successor, she should have waited till the last minute. There's no successor to anoint here. Alexander has criticized Brad Bradford, so I don't see how that. If he's playing a game, I don't think so. I think he wants to be in it for his reasons. And like I said, this is a situation where it's going to split the vote. And anyone who doesn't want Olivia Chow as mayor is going to have a decision to make. And unfortunately, it makes it a lot easier for her if there's a vote split like that to stick around.
And if I can say, this is a living legacy of bad policy by Kathleen Wynne. There used to be a filing deadline and then a month or two cooling off period where candidates could still withdraw from the ballot before sometime in September. Huh. So the Wynne government made the last day to the last minute to file also the last minute to withdraw. And I think that plays, that's another advantage for incumbents, and it's another part of the game. And it's another thing the premier has the opportunity to fix during the remainder of his 4 years in the current government.
I mean, is that something with printing deadlines? I don't know.
No, it's just an arbitrary time, right? Like one of the things they got right was make it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, right? Rather than 5 o'clock. It makes it easier just for everybody involved. But it's wrong not to have a cooling off period.
Okay. We only have a few seconds left. Tasha, last 20 seconds.
Yeah, I think, look, all these deadlines, it's all going to be a hot Friday. Some people will be up till midnight tonight waiting to see what happens with the trade deal if it doesn't get announced by 5 o'clock and everyone can go off to their vacation plans for the weekend. So for the political nerds, we'll all be watching.
We'll all be watching, including me. Thank you so much to all our callers and texters and to you, Tasha Carradine and John McEtitian. I'm Libby Znaimer. I'll be watching at midnight. I'll be back here on Monday, and we will talk then.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.